SVC Media.
Welcome to the iGaming Daily Podcast, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market.
In the post-PASPA era, we've seen major betting scandals across the MLB, NFL, and NCAA, but none come close to the story of Jonte Porter, the now former Toronto Raptor, who has been permanently banned from the NBA for violations related to sports betting. On today's episode of iGaming Daily, we'll break down what Porter did, how the league responded, and what this means for the sports betting and basketball industries going forward. iGaming Daily is presented by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. 56% of the EGR Power 50 personalized player experiences with Optimove. Just a reminder, we are still doing the special offer where Optimove will give new clients a first free month when they sign up with Optimove. You can find the link to that in the description below. I'm Jessica Wellman, editor of SBC Americas, joined by my colleagues on the Insider Sport team, Ted Ormclay and Callum Williams. Guys, this is a little trippy for me. I'm so used to Charlie that one, having more than one person is a lot, but having two of you is going to be fun for me, but also a bit of a change up. So welcome to the pod. To dive in, I would love to hear, how much do either of you follow the NBA?
I think Callum's the man to start with for this
one. I think I'm better off going first. I've been a fan of the NBA for like the past 4 years now. It started in COVID with the Jordan documentary. Just been watching it ever since. Favorite teams.
Do you have a team or do you just follow everybody?
No, my team's the Golden State Warriors.
That's a pretty solid pick. Yeah. Ted, I take it you are not a basketball person.
Not massively, no. I think US sports in general, I tend to pay more attention the closer we get towards the end of the seasons, when we're seeing sort of winners become on top and when it gets a bit more fiery, I guess. But I've got a lot of appreciation for all the sports, but yeah, I'd say I tend to follow the European ones a lot more.
I'll be honest, you know, if you listen to this pod, you will know that I love college basketball. I don't think there's a better sport. I do not watch the NBA. I don't get into it at all. I will, like you, as the season goes on, my allegiance just goes to whichever team has the most University of Kentucky alumni on it. So that's why I'm generally never a Golden State Warriors fan, because there's never that many. We had Boogie for a second, that's about it. But Callum, since you are the resident NBA fan, I will leave it to you. For those who have been living under a rock and don't know, what did Jonte Porter do that has led the NBA to actually permanently ban him from the league?
Yeah, sure, Jess. So Jonte Porter, with all due respect, he wasn't the most high-profile player in the league.
I don't think that's as much respect as he deserves.
He was a two-way contract player with the Toronto Raptors. And basically, investigation started when there was suspicious betting activity when he was involved in a game against the Sacramento Kings on the 20th of March. He was only playing for like relatively about 3 or 4 minutes before having to go off due to illness or injury. But this also led to then a major bet being placed in the same game parlay of about $80,000, which was placed on Porter's under stats. So that definitely alerted organizations like US Integrity, which is the suspicious betting data activity monitor for the NBA, as well as, you know, the NFL as well. So they kind of tracked that down. It came back to the league, and then the league have opened the investigation, which has also found that Porter placed at minimum 13 bets across NBA games, one of which that the Raptors lost, and none of which that Porter played as well. He was also playing for the Raptors G League team, the Raptors 905. So he was just telling betting associates that he had an illness or he had a slight injury, which then he would then go into the court, play about 2 or 3 minutes or maybe 4 minutes, and then come off the court due to said illness or injury. So that would then pass on to the associates. They would then place suspicious larger than normal bets on Porter's unders, and it's kind of trailed back to the NBA, and now they've gave him a lifetime ban.
Yeah, you know, Callum, you've covered this pretty thoroughly. A couple things to kind of add to that. Like, when you point out he's not the most well-known player, he also is not a starter. For those who don't follow basketball, Steph Curry plays the majority of minutes in a game. Jonte Porter is a bench player who would come in and play. I don't really know what his average minutes were, but I would assume it's like, you know, 10, yeah, something like that. So when you're betting those unders, they're already pretty small numbers because he's, you know, a role player. The 80,000 would have, well, it did hit, and then they got caught. Had they not gotten caught, would have paid out $1.1 million, which is, I think what's so, I hate to use the word funny because this is a serious thing, but this and the NCAA baseball scandal, what has been really funny to me, and I think a lot of people in the industry, is just how like brazen these people were about cheating. So, you know, Callum, when you saw that this guy who, I mean, I know of his brother. I never knew of Jonte Porter, other than
his brother Michael Porter.
His brother Michael Porter is a little bit more famous. Were you surprised, like, that this guy thought he could get away with it? Are you just surprised at the boldness of the scam?
Yeah. Well, it's he's opened himself up really clearly, because if you're placing that amount of money on, say, Jonte Porter, who, like we said, is not a, you know, he's a bench player at the end of the day, it's just going to cause betting operators to look into it, because there's, you know, with the player props, I'm sure you know, Jess, like, a lot of bettors are going to put bets on Steph Curry's, on your LeBron James's, the parlays, all that type of stuff. So there isn't, I don't think there's going to be many people out there other than the betting associate who place that bet, placing bets on Jonte Porter. So yeah, it's definitely he just opened himself up at the end of the day, and I think the regulators and the suspicious betting data partners just caught onto it too quick, and yeah, he's been received his ban now, and lifetime ban, that's a bit up in the air, because I think if a Steph Curry or a LeBron James did this, then I don't think we're looking at a lifetime ban. But yeah, like, he's, because he's a
really
well lesser known player, then they kind of had to throw the book at him, right?
I mean, I will say, you know, Pete Rose was a pretty famous baseball player and manager at the time that he was thrown out. I think when you have somebody who is manipulating the game, essentially, yeah, to, you know, I'd be curious to litmus test this if we caught one of them doing it, but I would hope that they get banned. Ted, you don't follow basketball. Reading up on it, did even you kind of process, like, this is a really bad version of cheating? Like, you're not even trying to hide it, right?
Well, I think you summed it up, Jess, best with the word brazen. Like, it was, yeah, the boldness of this was pretty crazy. Obviously, so when I first saw the story come out, there were two things that's kind of stuck out at me at first. The first one of those is kind of what we've covered. It was the thought in my head of, who's Jonte Porter? I know, like I said, I don't follow basketball a lot, but, you know, I recognize the big names. Like we've mentioned, Steph Curry, LeBron James, obviously the big sort of international stars and so on. And there's a few others whose names I would see and go, yeah, I've heard about them. I thought, yeah, firstly, never heard of this guy before. And secondly, in fact, the bigger thing that stood out was the sheer amount of money they were putting on him. So, you know, $80,000, that's a huge bet. And I know, you know, there's quite a few people out there who like to have a big punt on things, but that's still, if that's making me, you know, if I'm looking at that and thinking, well, I'd think twice about that, then the betting data people, the betting integrity people at US Integrity and so on, as well as the traders at the bookmakers themselves, they're going to look at that, and that's going to be setting off alarm bells. Surely, to have an $80,000 bet put on for someone who, like we said, is usually a substitute who doesn't play particularly long, to get to leave after a few minutes, it's that is something that's going to catch attention. So it was very brazen of them to think they could pull that off.
Yeah, to point out too, like, not everybody gets approved for an $80,000 three-leg same-game parlay on the same player. You know, a big discussion in the U.S. from professional bettors is how they get limited, especially when betting unders. I don't know if you guys know this, but, like, typically here in the U.S., at least, you're betting – the average fan bets the over. You know, like, you're not anti-sweating. As Callum pointed out, you're a Steph Curry fan. You're a LeBron James fan. You think it's their birthday, so they're going to go off tonight or something like that. So it tends to be overs that people bet. And so, yeah, this was a VIP for sure. You know, this is not something like – You don't auto input this into the app and the computer approves it. Like, a human checked off on this. So if you look around the NBA media space and the American media space, it is nothing but op-eds that regulated sports betting proliferating in the United States kind of invited this to happen. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, we are reaping what we've sown. Ted, you know, you covered a whole range of markets that have been regulated, have regulated sports betting for a long time. Do you think what happened and the fact that he got caught, is it this condemnation of sports betting, or is it kind of a testament that when you bring it out into the light, people catch it?
I think it's a combination of both. I know that's not really the definitive answer we'll want, but obviously, yeah, the condemnation side of it is that betting's visibility in the US has skyrocketed since 2018, and a lot of that is because of the association with sports, like the various bookmaker partnerships we see between the NBA itself as a league, as well as its various franchises all have multiple betting partners. So I think it's the visibility of it that people will have more of the issue with this. Of it's something that's often got talked about in the UK and mentioned by reform advocates over here, of, you know, we're discouraging players from betting using these sites, and yet we're also plastering them all over the sport. So I think it's the visibility of it that I think is probably more of a cause of concern for people. But on the other hand, as you say, the testament to it is the fact that if the industry wasn't as regulated as it is now in the US and didn't have the extensive use of data and, you know, official integrity and partnerships and the leagues, the bookmakers and US integrity and other stakeholders all working quite closely together to spot these sort of things, then, as we said, it never would have got spotted. And if you think about betting, since before PASPA, betting has always been going on in the US. It's just in the states where it wasn't allowed, it was going on underground. So the argument you could make is, if betting wasn't regulated the way it was, he could have done this with an illicit bookmaker, got his friends to put on, you know, this $80,000 bets with some underground bookmaker. And that never would have got spotted because there's no sort of official oversight. There'd be no data collecting. There's no one keeping an eye on that. So I suppose that's the real testament to it, is, as you said, the fact that it got spotted.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can kind of look at the Shohei Ohtani interpreter case as an example. Like, that was happening in the illegal market, and this is a dude who bet like the combined handle of South Dakota, Kansas, and Maine. You know, it's like he wagered $325 million. So if it takes somebody getting that deep into it for the authorities, like the Department of Justice or the feds, to get involved, you're right that, like, you know, they certainly weren't going to notice if it was like a small potatoes, somebody just being like a more competent cheater, you know, who is just like, maybe I'll miss a free throw and make it look like an accident versus like tagging, going in for 90 seconds being like, my tummy hurts, do you mind if I come out? You know, that's certainly a big part of it too. What I will say, it's been an interesting debate on social media. I do think, and I'm curious to hear your guys' thoughts on it, because you're not in the U.S. market and you've seen what the U.K. does. The fact that there are even lines on these players that are bench players who are the 11th, 12th man in, and that you can make same game parlays and bet builders out of them. That's not really been the case in the UK, right? It's not been something that these lines used to just not be available, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we have our equivalent, obviously, to the same game parlay over here is the bet builder, as you said. With that, you tend to find on that, as you'd expect, the usual sort of goal scorers, amount of goals scored. If I'm just using football as an example here, the number of yellow cards or red cards issued, things like that. You might get stuff like, the closest I think we'll get to this scenario is you might have players on there, you know, like player to get given a yellow card, player to get given a red card. But I don't think I've ever come across, maybe I've just not been looking in the right places, but it's certainly not something I've come across of, you know, a player to... to leave after X amount of minutes or something like that. You'll get players to get carded.
More just unders on points, rebounds, assists.
Yeah, in terms of John Terry Porter as well, I think we also, like, when it comes to players, football, for example, as well, players for like first goal scorer, score anytime, it's always the most likely to score. So, for example, Manchester City, Erling Haaland, Kevin De Bruyne, etc. You're very rarely going to see a player who's on the bench regular as a player prop, for instance. Mm. So yeah, it's not really too common for relatively unknown players to have bet player props available to them in the UK.
I think a lot of the time bookmakers or the trading teams will look at it and think this isn't even worth our time to create odds on.
Yeah.
Or, you know, it just seems too bizarre. Or maybe sometimes they are thinking this is just inviting potential sort of illicit activity, certainly in the lower levels of the English football system. Again, if we just stay on football. That is quite unusual that they would be offering such a specific prop bet on a player who's, as we said, is a bit of an unknown.
Yeah, I mean, the upside of the technology that market makers use and how much it's advanced is that you can offer a lot of markets and that it makes, you know, betting more fun and more interesting. But it does kind of raise the question, like, do we need to be offering these markets? Do we need to limit severely? You know, like, I always point out, I like to bet the Oscars. It's the only thing that I feel really smart about. But like, they will limit you. They're not going to let me win. Like, I'm not betting 80 grand to win $1 million on the Oscars. There's nobody on the planet that is going to be allowed to do that, because there is an understanding that even though it's under lock and key, the results, that there's always room for potential manipulation. Mm-hmm. And so with that, they limit you that you can only win like $1,000, maybe $2,000. So is this something, do you think the pushback would be too big if the discussion becomes that we're going to cap how much anybody can win on a same game parlay? And do you think there's appetite for the books to do this, given that same game parlays are what are fueling bottom lines right now?
That's a tough question. I feel like, among certain sections of the customer base, there definitely would be some pushback, obviously, particularly among the people who might prefer a sort of a higher staking bet. I guess, the trouble is parlays are just, and the same with bet builders over here, they're a very popular way for customers just to have an easy bet on a game that you might not even have much, you know, with, let's say, I'll use the term an emotional stake in. You know what I mean? So that you're watching, let's say, you're watching an NBA game between two teams that you're not particularly bothered about, and then having that, you know, get a $10 parlay on it or something is just a way that you're invested in the game. And that's what they're quite popular for. So I think that brings that, again, it's sort of there's a double-edged sword to this, in that there's a lot of people the lower staking people aren't going to be that bothered about, having a massive win on it, because they're not going to be expecting a massive win from their $10 bet unless they put on some absolutely crazy out there selections on there. The people who will probably be more concerned about that will be the ones putting on significant sums of money, like the VIP players. So I think you would get pushback from, I think you would get some pushback from them. But also, the US betting market is still, I wouldn't quite call it early stages now, but in comparison to, say, the UK, which has had a regulated betting market for the past few decades, I think a lot of customers are still getting adjusted to it, really, and are learning the sort of, learning the ropes of it. And so I think if they're going to make a change to these parlays because of incidents like this, they're better off making it sooner rather than later, before more and more customers get used to the options that they have and the any potential limits or rules that they have.
Yeah, I'll just add on to that as well, Jess. I mean, watching the NBA playoffs, it was either last year or 2022. There was this boom in sports betting advertisement, and I vividly remember on Twitter and in social media sites like that, there was a lot of pushback to that. There was a lot of pushback on why we're seeing so many sports betting adverts, because we get them over in the UK because we have the US feed sometimes, and even I was seeing it as well. And it's like, this is interesting, because it was kind of almost like three in a row at one point. So I think also with the operators as well, maybe they slowed down the marketing of the player prop bets and the parlays. Maybe that's a solution. But in terms of when it comes to the punter or the better, I think it's such a popular betting option. So I can't see the better slowing down that process anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think operators are going, even if this does put a mar on the industry and it's a bad look, I don't think they're going to do anything to jeopardize. I would think the NBA same game parlay market's pretty big. I mean, look at right now, there's a push by the NCAA to limit in-game or player props in general on collegiate players, and operators are pushing back. Data out of Ohio indicated that is like 1.2% of all of the bets that they take, and operators are kind of like, refusing to even concede that. And it's such a measly part of their revenue that I would be surprised if they, changed anything in terms of how much SGPs they offer and what kind of action you can get down. Looking ahead to the future, question to both of you. Is this, it's the biggest kind of scandal we've had in the U.S. of the post-PASPA era. Do you think there are more on the horizon?
I think I would say definitively yes. I think just based on our experience of the UK market, we've had countless over here over the years. For some reason, the past couple of years, I don't know if you've noticed, Scott, there seems to have been a lot more in recent years, including involving some quite high profile, maybe not necessarily high profile, but players in the Premier League and so on, which usually you tend to find these sort of incidents further down the league system, because that's where players are making less money and they might be more inclined or more influenced by sort of bad actors. Obviously, the big one we've had over here lately has been the Ivan Toney incident with Brentford. So I'd say based on our experience over here and in other sort of longer established markets, I'd say there will be, I think there will be some on the horizon. I think something that a lot of stakeholders and regulators in the US are probably going to be looking out for in the future is anything to do with, we've talked about college athletics. I think a lot of it might be to do with that. I think because I know there's been some concerns about bookmakers allowing people to bet on on college athletics, hasn't it? I believe, Jess, I may have got that wrong. I'd say just overall, I think some more stuff will come. I don't know if I'm being a bit too pessimistic there, but my vote would be on yes.
Yeah, kind of the same sentiment as Ted. I think the US market is still kind of maturing, but I think over time it's definitely going to weed out some of these problems, like Jontay Porter. I don't think it'll entirely go away, because I always think that there's the threat of like the black market and grey markets in certain areas. But I think as regulation continues to progress in certain states, I think it will die down, but not completely go away.
All right, we'll see what happens in the future. I think we're all in agreement that, if anything, we've seen that the very obvious idiots doing this have gotten caught, but I'm sure much more subtle cheating is probably taking place as well. So I'm with you that something else is probably on the horizon for us. Speaking of on the horizon, the weekend may be here, but don't forget to come back next week for a full week of new episodes on all the latest gaming news there is to offer at iGaming Daily.
Thank you for listening to today's iGaming Daily Podcast, supported by Optimove, the number one CRM marketing solution for the iGaming market. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders Magazine. Happy reading.